For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now. The
Score! This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
So for us, you know, I literally have on my wall all the Big Ten schools, and I'll say, hey, you know, we might be battling out Michigan State, Iowa, Minnesota, but I said, let me tell you this. You come play for me. I'll take you here, 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 and we'll go play them on their turf. I'll play for your travel and your hotel, right? We're going to go play. And now we get to include USC and UCLA, right? And you know, I remember playing in the Rose Bowl as a player and then as a coach, and now we get to have them on our schedule, right? It's a tremendous, unique, and this time in Big Ten, it's something that's never been done. So rather than shy or run away from it, we gravitate to it and talk about what this opportunity means.
Brett Bielema on the morning show here on The Score with Mully and Haw, the Illinois head football coach, has been part of this whole new Big Ten Media Days rollout. So let's talk about what is being seen and heard there with Joshua Perry, host of the Big Ten College Countdown, stadium football analyst on Twitter at RIP_JEP. And with us not only on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com, but twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. What's up, Joshua? How are you?
Feeling good. Third day of Big Ten Media Days, and the event has not been this long in the past. So my tank is running a little bit low, but these coaches brought it today.
Well, I want to go back to a coach from yesterday for a second here. UCLA introduced their new head coach to the world in Deshaun Foster. It didn't go, I think, as planned, but I know that you've talked with him. What happened?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, man. So Deshaun Foster, I actually interviewed this offseason on Red Corner, Blue Corner, which you can see on stadium. It's me and Jake Butt, who's a great analyst on the Big Ten Network. And he was great. He was like super measured, had a lot of really good stuff to do. I think he's got like a really good vision for his program. Saw him before he went up on the podium. He came and, you know, spent a little bit of time with us. And it was funny because his SID was joking with him. And he was like, yeah, you know, Brett Bielema. You know, that guy, he went for about 10, 12 minutes on his opening statement. You know, we were joking around about the filibuster thing. So I don't know if he was in his head a little bit, not exactly sure, but like the freeze was definitely a moment where people started asking some questions. It was the weird, you know, it's us in USC in LA type of thing. And so the one thing I know, if you win ball games, nobody's going to be talking about it, but you kind of got to win the ball games now.
You have a championship ring from Ohio State. We talked a little bit about Ohio State and Ryan Day, where it doesn't seem to matter that much that his record is something that any coach would strive for. Can you kind of give us a window into the psyche of Ohio State and Ohio State fans on what is good enough to keep you from being mentioned as you're going to get fired, even though you've won like 95% of your games?
Yeah, I mean, you can't just win. You gotta win the right ones, and you gotta win good enough too, which is one of the craziest things. Like first few weeks of the season, people in Columbus get mad if you're not absolutely blowing teams out. Like if the score is too close, like they thought it should have been 6 touchdowns and it was 5 touchdowns. Like people are writing articles about it. Of course, you can't lose to your rival. It's been 3 years in a row of that. They made it to the college football playoff in the 22 season. They lost on that heartbreaker missed field goal to Georgia, but they also had a couple 2-score leads in that game. So, you know, you kind of grapple with that if you're a fan of Ohio State. And then ultimately the lasting impression too, in the bowl game against Missouri this past year, where they didn't perform very well at all. I think that's where people get, but it's difficult. Like, I asked a question to folks who are like, oh, I'm done with Ryan Day and he hasn't done enough here. Well, who are you going to go to that's going to get you better results than this?
Right. Because like, I'm not exactly sure. It sounds so punitive and reactive. Get him out of here. Fire that guy. Get him out of here. What a miserable existence. When unless you have somebody in mind who says, look, the answer is this guy. When the time comes, we got to grab this guy. It's all crazy.
I mean, I think we all know these people, like the rich kid that you grew up with that gets tired of their toys real quick, right? Like, and they want the next latest and greatest thing. And it's like, I don't know. You got to learn how to live like regular people. Like, you 11 games a year. Ryan Day, it's been literally 11 win regular seasons or 12 win regular seasons since he got to Ohio State. He coached in a national title game, people. Like, it's but folks are like, I don't know if he's got it. Well, who else does that? Like, you direct me to the guy, because I don't like running away from things. I like running to things. And it seems like in this instance, people are trying to run away, and I'm not sure that's the right choice.
When it comes to how this conference changes from a play style, when you add in a place like Oregon to the mix, how do you feel like that's going to work in this expanded Big Ten?
It's intriguing, and it's been a topic of discussion. The West Coast coaches were talked about adapting their style of play to what's traditionally seen in the Big Ten. You see the Big Ten coaches, the traditional powers, are asked about how they're approaching some of the West Coast teams. And everybody's talked about the line of scrimmage. You know, the coaches that have been in this conference said, we want to win games on the line of scrimmage. The coaches that are coming in to this conference said, listen, we're preparing to win games on the line of scrimmage. So I think everybody understands what it's about. And the game of football, as much as everything around it has changed, I think the formula is still pretty clear. Even the best years for, you know, a team like Oregon, they were good on the offensive line. We forget that Washington a year ago won the Joe Moore Award for the best offensive line in the country. They were good in the trenches. And so I think they've been prepared for it. I think that they understand it. Certainly it's going to be a change for everybody. Maybe a little more tempo than you're used to, right? Like, maybe a little more physicality for the guys coming in. But I think everybody understands and they know what they have to do coming into the conference.
I think it's probably wise for us to let go of the conference identity idea at all. I mean, really, that we're being beaten over the head with this, that conferences, these aggregations of major programs into essentially arbitrary television groupings means we're probably past the Big Ten, that's the middle of America and rough and tumble football. It's not that high flying Pac-12 stuff. You know, it's hard now. And I know they want that. And I know the branding aspect is really important, but it asks a lot of us as fans to buy that.
It's intriguing, because I remember when I was a player, like the conference had gone through this reimagining where everybody was running the wide open offenses. Like, my freshman year, we practiced in our base defense with three linebackers on the field for a majority of our reps. And by the time I was to my junior year, we played with a nickel in for most of the game. So I think the conference has seen changes, right? Like, it is the new age of offense. I think where the Big Ten understands things, the SEC gets this too, as much as they're known for athletes and everything that goes on down there, they know it's still football. Like, they know you have to be strong in the trenches there. So I agree with you from the standpoint of, like, I think people like to talk about this conference like it's a true throwback. And all I know is, like, Urban, when I was playing for him, we know about the spread offense, I mean, wide receivers, talented guys, fast guys everywhere. He just wanted to make sure that we had dudes up front on the line of scrimmage so his quarterback could stay clean. And so I think that's kind of where the line is right now. Like, I think USC is fine, right? Everybody wants a Lincoln Riley. We've seen that's the mold of offensive coordinator to head coach that people are looking at. Jed Fish, a very similar thing, an offensive mind who can get you multiple looks out there. But the end of the day, man, big boy football, you got to be able to protect up front. You got to be able to get after the quarterback.
Speaking of Lincoln Riley, obviously people in Chicago are very excited that one of his quarterbacks is now in the NFL and playing for the Bears. What have you heard? And when you do your tape study on Caleb, what are the things you're excited about? What are the things that you are looking forward to seeing if he can overcome?
Yeah, I mean, Caleb to me is one of those guys that, like, you want to like it, but there's always that little hint of trouble that's around the corner. Not from a personality standpoint. I don't want anybody to misconstrue that. What I mean is, you see every physical tool on the tape, right? Like, he's got the arm talent. He's got the movement skill. He's got the competitive edge in the moxie. You can tell that he loves the game. I know people were getting on him for being emotional after losses. Like, I love when guys are emotional after losses. I don't like losing either. I get emotional when I lose in everyday life. So I'm totally here for that. It's the idea that he struggled to stay within system consistently. And that's fine for a guy who had been in Lincoln Riley's system for a while. I think as a young quarterback in the NFL, he's going to have to continue to be in system there. I think the other thing that always comes along with it, with a guy who is Caleb Williams, right? Like, there's an aura to being Caleb Williams, is you have to win in the locker room before you can win on the field. And I know that he's done all of the work to do that coming in as a rookie. But as long as he can get down the mechanics and the execution of the offense, get the playbook, get the cadence, you know, how you get in a stance, like things as simple as that, you know, might not have been a big deal for Lincoln Riley because he knows he's got a guy who's going to win the Heisman. Like, all of those details are huge for a young quarterback coming into the NFL. I think it's a learning curve. And my biggest question about that, and I'll kick it back to you for this. And Lawrence, we've talked about this before, but I don't think that he has a lot of patience in year one, because the Bears were not great last year, but it wasn't a total disaster with the quarterback that they didn't want to have to begin with. Like, they're a team to me that should be able to take the next couple of steps in terms of wins and make a run at the playoffs. And if Caleb is a guy who takes a little bit longer on that development, which young quarterbacks do sometimes, I'm curious how people will feel about that.
Yeah, I am too. And I feel like it sucks though, JP, like, cause it's not fair. Like, it's, and I get it. Life's not fair. They say that at the beginning of Malcolm in the Middle every day. It's not fair. But I look at this and I say, it feels like they've done everything that they can, and he's done everything that he can. There's no acrimony or anything like that with him. But you've played in the NFL too. Like, for you, coming from a big time program and playing defense on a big stage, and then going to the NFL, what hit you when you got to the league where you were like, oh, this is really different from what I experienced even at the highest level of college football?
It's the mechanics of everything, right? Like, I think, and I've said this like a number of times, I guess, on this hit, football is football. But how you execute football is what varies in a lot of different places. I remember as a rookie going into training camp, the way that we would set the front, like in college, we would set the three technique, and they wanted us to set the bubble, the one technique, when I got to the league. So everything from that standpoint was backwards, like thinking about how I was going to call out the front. The terminology that people like to use when it comes to these things, I came from a system where, you know, our terminology always included what the coverage shell was at the end of it. I got to the NFL and our terminology was just named after cities, which was a kind of strange thing. So it forces you to think differently. And when you're a quarterback, I think all of that gets exacerbated, right? Like, you hear people have the conversations about the calls in the huddles. Was he a guy that had a lot of verbiage in college? Well, he was looking off to the sideline a lot. So you could probably guess, no, he didn't. Was he a guy that had to call two plays in the huddle? Not exactly sure he huddled. So that's going to be a change. When we talk about cadence, like, their cadence is important to these coaches. It's important to the wide receivers because sometimes they can't hear. And so they kind of have to go off of a little bit of a rhythm there. That's what becomes difficult when you get there. Like, he can have every tool, every skill. He can have a great knowledge base, but it's the way that they ask him to learn now and the way that they ask him to use his knowledge that becomes a challenge.
When you've been in and around people in the Big Ten right now, how vulnerable do their rivals think Michigan may be at this point with the coaching change? As good as Sharon Moore, as well as he did last year, it wasn't his team. This is his team now in this world, and
it's missing some pieces.
And it's missing some pieces, but they're at the top of the mountain right now. But I would imagine that there are others thinking now's our chance to get them before they get this figured out.
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually sat down with Sharon Moore earlier today, and he's excited. I think, number one, he knows that he's working with a good defense. My question for the defense is what the depth is going to look like overall, and they've got they have linebackers that played last year, but the linebacker room is going to look new. So that's a question. But if you know the personnel they have coming back, they could be one of the best defenses in the country this year. Their huge question is on offense. Now, Sharon is an offensive line guy. He got those guys a ton of reps, even the backups last year. I think he's confident in what they can look like. They've got to get that together. I am very unsure of their wide receivers. It just hasn't been something that they've recruited to the highest level in the past, but they've got a great tight end in Colson Loveland, who's got the opportunity to be like Jake Butt Jr. there at Michigan, where he could win a Mackey Award for the best tight end in the game. And then Donovan Edwards, veteran running back. Huge question about the quarterback. And from some of the commentary that's come out, it's like, I think it's a real challenge for him. Alex Orji was a guy who completed 48% of his passes as a high school senior, and he hasn't thrown the ball a ton since getting to Michigan. They've got Jack Tuttle, who transferred in from Indiana. Dude's on like his seventh year. He's got the veteran nature, but he's limited athletically. And I was talking to a Michigan writer today who said, after watching spring and going through the summer and talking to people, this person still feels like Michigan is going to be an 8-4 team this year. I think that there are coaches that probably sense a similar thing, where if you can jump on them, it would be really difficult for them to have to play a game from behind, and you could try to win with that formula. It also, it might not be the most helpful thing that they get Texas in week two. Like, obviously you win that game, sets you on a different trajectory, but if you lose in a nationally televised game against a team that's supposed to be going to the college football playoff and it looks kind of ugly, now you start to really see what this team could look like that might not be so good.
Speaking of seventh year, this is just a fun little note. I think JP is knows about this. Dylan Gabriel, the quarterback for Oregon, in one of the big games that he lost early on in his career, he was felled by a young cornerback named Amon Gardner, a.k.a. Sauce Gardner, who's now in his third year in the NFL while Dylan Gabriel is playing for Oregon.
This is college football right now, right? Like, it is the land of the Jeremiah Smiths, the kid Ohio State has who's a wide receiver that people think could be an All-American, and it is the guys who damn near played at the same time as me that are finishing up their careers right now. Dylan's out here at Media Day. He's a darling out here. I think people are excited to see him. We're certainly excited to have him in the conference, but we do forget how old some of these guys are with the red shirts and the COVID year and everything that could have happened. Now free transfer, is it third school that he's on? It's pretty crazy.
Yep, it really is. JP, really appreciate you jumping on with us. Thanks so much for hooking up the Twitch feed too.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate you guys.
That is Joshua Perry, the former Ohio State and NFL linebacker.
I love that guy.
Now
he's great.
Stadium football analyst.
I'm sitting in his chair today at Stadium. I'm hosting the rally because he's at Big Ten Media Days, and I'm hosting with Clay Harbor. And I told Joshua today, I was like, I got to get in between shows. I got to get the 30s out and do some curls. You know, I can't just walk into that studio just looking like me.
Oh, you got to be pumped up a little bit.
If I'm sitting next to Clay Harbor for an hour, you know, it's what the hell?
Yeah, you might just have to take the L.
Take the L, yeah. You're right.
You're right.
I just got to take the L.
You're right.
Mr. Handsome is just going to be next to me, and I'm just going to have to live with that.
Next up, let's get back to baseball for a second. Some interesting thoughts about more sort of state of the game stuff, but also involving what's happening with the quest for velocity, pitching injuries, and how that is trickling down.
Yeah, I think this is notable, not just if you're an MLB fan, but if you have a kid that's in travel baseball, and Dan has experienced a lot of this over the last few years, you'll want to listen to our next segment because a top-level baseball executive has some thoughts on how we're doing it right and how we're doing it wrong. That's next here on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2, on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
In Odyssey Station.
Baseball is interesting because at different levels of baseball, there's different things that are more important. In the amateur game up through college, it's really, can you throw harder than the pitchers can handle? And so most of the coaches and trainers spend focusing on velocity with those pitchers. And frankly, some kids just grow up faster than others. You get the 6-foot kids in the Little League that pitch all the way through the Little League World Series just because they overwhelm the rest of the hitters physically on the mound.
Brian Bannister, the senior director of pitching, I think that's right, for the Chicago White Sox. He was so good. We were really looking forward to talking with him, and he was...
Everything that we thought he was going to be.
Yep.
And I think a real beacon of hope if you're a White Sox fan.
I don't know how they lucked into having him here, but enjoy him while you can, because he is one of the rare pitching side guys that could be running a team. Usually it's a hitting side guy.
Yeah, but maybe, and I don't even know if he wants to, and he kind of said he likes being in his cave. We'll see if that holds true. I was listening to this last night while I was watching the White Sox game, because there was no reason to turn the sound up on the White Sox game because you knew how it was going to go and all of that stuff. So I'm watching the game, and I'm listening to the Eric Hosmer podcast, Digging Deep. We should at some point try to get Hos on, because I really like what he's doing, whether it was the stuff that they did with Wash or now this. They had J.J. Piccolo, who is the GM of the Royals, on. And there's a lot of great stuff in there about how they scouted Bobby Witt Jr. and things that they thought was important. But when they got towards the end, they got into a conversation about pitching and pitching injuries and youth baseball. And I wanted Dan to hear it because I know that he's had some of the same realizations as a parent. And I thought that you might have those realizations too.
There's a difference in the way players are brought up. Personally, I don't think it's healthy at all. I really don't. We went through in our organizational meetings, we talked about overcorrecting, like we were overcorrecting. We were trying to meet the individual too much, and we're forgetting about what this is about, and that's to score one more run than the other team every night. Yeah, that's ultimately what it's about.
That's all we tried to do.
That's what it is, yeah. But the challenge has gotten greater because that's just not the way kids think. Now, kids go to the larger schools, the SEC, the ACC, the Big Ten, Big 12. That's those coaches are getting paid pretty good money, yeah. So they need to win. Mm-hmm. So they're sort of indoctrined in college to the way we want to play the game. But the high school kids, it's definitely more of a challenge. You get pitchers, and I can go on and on about this because it's I don't want to say it's a source. Subject, but it's a frustrating thing. We get questions all the time about the injuries to pitchers. Well, just look at what we're doing. I mean, we're not teaching deliveries anymore. We go and train 12 months out of the year, where not too long ago it was put the ball down for 3 or 4 months, but instead they're on the mound, just blasting, throwing to numbers, and it deliveries go to crap, arm injuries go up. Now, are they throwing harder? Sure, they are. But are they going to be throwing harder when they're 30? Where's the art of making a pitch? You know, so there's nothing to really think about when it comes to arm injuries other than look back at what, how kids are training. Like, you know, it's just not a 12-month a year sport. It's hard to throw 180 innings now in the big league. So how are you going to do that if you were trained to throw 30 pitches at a time as hard as you can from the time you're 10, 11, 12 years old? And then you go to showcases. High school kids don't know how to pitch seven innings anymore.
Yeah.
You know, some of them. I shouldn't say all. You know, some of them know.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, just the whole, like, when we play professional ball, you have a rotation and then you have seven guys in the bullpen, whatever it was. When you're playing summer ball or, you know, Little League, it's like you got three, four guys that can pitch. And you look at the schedule and it's like they got, you know, tournaments and doubleheaders Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's like, who's pitching all these innings?
Yeah.
So the usage is out of control, too.
It is. And you know what? I my kids had really good experiences. I'll say that. They were in travel ball. Probably, if I had to do it over again, I'd probably try to hold them off to 12, 13 years old. One of them started at 8. One of them started at 10. But I can remember, like, Sunday mornings or Saturday, Sunday mornings, waking them up at 5:30 in the morning because we got an 8 a.m. game. We might play three games that day. Well, how do you develop the passion for the game when kids don't want to wake up at 5:30 to go play baseball? Mm-hmm. You know, and in this region, it was cold a lot. So I do think we lose some kids, or we don't develop the passion the way we should, because we're putting so much on kids in this tournament setting. I'd much rather see it. Kids stay local. You know, playing a lot of games is fine. It's just a matter of how you do it.
Okay, that is all over the place. There's a lot going on in there, and I don't. There are a lot of starts of thoughts that don't get fully developed. So I'm not quite sure where to start. I will say that when he says, well, where does all that pitching come from? Well, most travel teams with which I have been affiliated, they would construct their roster based on a baseline level of pitching competence just because of tournaments and because of very strict rules about pitch counts. And knowing that you can't just be top heavy, that everybody on your roster has to be able to throw strikes at a very minimum. Not everybody's got to be your ace, and obviously you're going to conserve and try to husband your pitching resources, but even your mid-leverage and low-leverage pitchers have to be competent, because every tournament we went to had really rigid pitching rules and pitch counts. And even the house league, and I believe me, I've been in between house league coaches and travel coaches to say, hey, you only throw 20 pitches in your house game because you got a travel tournament. And the house coach is like, well, wait, the travel kids are the best pitchers on my house team. I got to use these kids. And you got to have effective communication. And that is a time as a parent where you do have to make sure that those coaches are working in the best interest of your kid.
And I think that you're very proactive because of your knowledge of it. I'm not sure that most of the parents in it are as knowledgeable as you.
No, is it true? Or they're knowledgeable and they don't care because their kid needs a scholarship more than my kid needed a scholarship. And they just want to say, you know, go to the showcases and you know, push, because it's a need situation.
Yeah, in some cases.
And that's just a privilege on my part that I could tell them, like, look, do you want to go to, do you want to play D3? Like, you're not a D1. Do you want to go play D3 college? You want to do the showcases?
I feel like Jason is better than D3.
No, I mean, he's played against some D2 guys here and there, but he just said no. He said, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, which is totally fine. But with Piccolo talking about, I do wonder about that, because, you know, my nephew is getting to the age where we're starting to, like, okay, does he's picked basketball. Like, that's his thing. Like, how much of that do you want to do?
Well, two sports, though, is key.
I agree.
When he says guys used to put the ball down for 3 months, that's why having a winter sport and a spring sport,
I agree.
That way you get in a different mode, and it balances out your body. It balances out your training.
It frees your mind a little bit, too, where if you're constantly thinking about the next time that you're on the mound, or
yes,
like that weighs on you instead of finding the fun in another thing. So I was really excited because little Cammy Cam decided, he's like, Uncle Lawrence, will you buy me a bat? So we were playing catch out in the yard, and I said to him, if he were to catch the ball 10 times in a row, that I would buy him a bat.
Do you know what bats cost?
Yes, I do.
Dude.
But he's little, so it's fine.
Still.
But yes, I am very aware of what bats cost. But we stayed out there and played, and he caught the ball 10 times, and so I got him a bat.
Nice.
So
what bat?
I can't remember. He's little, so it's little.
Yeah, like probably a drop 12 that you just want to swing because it's so light.
Yeah. So for t-ball, because that would be the first thing that he does.
So you're spending $50.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was really happy that even though he's good at basketball already, and that side of the family is a basketball family, that he's at least looking and saying, I want to try other stuff. It's just so difficult. It's so difficult. And I think that there are a lot of leagues or a lot of coaches that will create these things for parents. And the parents are like, oh, well, they have to go to that because if they don't, then they're not going to get seen. And then you see the same coaches, you know, ignite green and yellow and silver and gold. It's like, how is my son or daughter supposed to shine in those moments?
That's always a red flag when you're dealing with a club and the club's like, oh, we have more people. We're going to cut a bunch of guys. We'll just make another team. That means because they just want to keep cashing your checks.
Right.
And not every one of those kids is most. They'll have their elite team of their top kids and that's it. And everybody else is like, oh, you get to say that you play for blah, blah, blah travel and you're on the super silver sluggers or whatever it might be. And you're just sending them thousands of dollars. But all they're doing, they'll just keep creating teams. Just because they want your money.
Right. I know a couple of high school coaches. One of my former teammates is one of the coaches out of HF. Shout out to my guy, Johnny Ogden. I'm going to have like a really detailed conversation because I don't have kids, so I'm not in it like every day. But even when I hear some of my friends talk about their kids' schedule, whether it's softball or baseball, I'm like, damn, that is a lot. That's a lot of baseball. And I obviously my frame of reference for this goes back to my own childhood, and we didn't play doubleheaders every day. Like it's such a weird thing for me to even conceive of when I hear parents talking about, yeah, you know, we're going to be gone all weekend. Yeah, where are you going? Well, we're going to Indianapolis, and we got a night game on Friday and then doubleheaders on Saturday and Sunday. And I'm like, what?
Yeah,
like,
it's crazy. And I'll also say this. If you ever have a coach that tries to negatively react to your kid playing more than one sport, well, your kid's not committed, not dedicated enough to baseball because you're playing hockey, or not dedicated enough to soccer, find a new coach.
I mean if you look at the guys, whenever we talk to professionals about this, they all say the same thing. Oh, well, I played football and then I wrestled, or I played football and then I ran track. I played football and then I played basketball. I played baseball, basketball, and football. And then I figured out that I was really good at blank, and then I went and did blank. The specialization stuff is...
Well, that's what's happening with pitching.
It's mind-boggling.
That's especially in pitching. When you got kids going out to driveline and the parents with resources who say, all right, you're spending a week in Seattle, and here's the weighted balls, and here's the bands, and here's all the stuff, and okay, that's great, and you get to your 85 or 86, that whatever the guns want to see at the showcases, and you get your whatever scholarship you want or partial scholarship you want, does the kid want it?
Right. Do they want to play? Like, do they want to play? And that's why I loved what he said about the love of the game. Like, are you creating a job for a child?
Mm-hmm.
And do they go, I hate this. Like, I don't want to get up at 5:30 every single weekend in this area in particular because the weather's nice, not nice. Do I have to, we got to get up and we got to travel. We got to fundraise so that we can travel and do all of this stuff where you're creating a job. And I wonder how like the local high school coaches, like field hockey. I went and saw, I was driving back home yesterday and seeing like the Wendell Phillips kids like out in the park. And I'm like, man, like they've built like this incredible program at Wendell Phillips. And I'm like, that seems cool. And maybe it's because I come from that structure of it, that to me, the pinnacle was always playing for the high school team and not as great as Jackie Robinson West was. Like it was, I want to go play baseball at Simeon, or I want to go play baseball at Harlan when I was a kid. That was what I was thinking. And now it seems like you're kind of doing someone a favor if you're playing on the high school team. And that's weird to me.
You said we had more sexy football?
Yeah, this one I'm bringing back personally.
Okay.
This was...
You harvested this yourself.
Yeah, this was a question that I have been dying to ask a football coach. And I finally got the opportunity to ask this coach. And I was incredibly satisfied with his answer. It's next here on The Score.
Dan Bernstein, Lawrence Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
That's a pop, that's a pop, that's a pop. Make it sexy, okay? It has to be sexy, otherwise you don't eat, okay?
Yeah, make it sexy. You found this.
I'm going to do my best. I was at SEC Media Days last week. I had a great time there. It was really wonderful to interact. I do think that we should have Clark Lee, the Vanderbilt coach, on, even though I don't think his team's going to be very good. I think he's very interesting.
Well, if he's as good as the Vanderbilt baseball coach was with his,
yeah,
he was awesome.
Yeah. But I went down there and I had like a primary objective of what I wanted to do. I wanted to talk defense with Kirby Smart.
Okay.
Because I often go down YouTube rabbit holes on Kirby Smart's defensive fronts. I'm fascinated with the mint front, where it's a zero technique and two heavy fives that he uses. And his,
what does he call it?
The mint front, M-I-N-T.
Mint front.
And seeing like how he feels about keeping people off of talented linebackers and letting them flow to the ball. And he's really good at defense. So I got my opportunity. And I raised my hand, and while everyone else was asking about, you know, who's going to be good on Georgia this year, and you got this transfer who's coming in from blah, 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 I was like, hey, I want to ask you a question specifically about defense, because I think that he's so innovative.
I bet he liked it.
He did. Here was his response when I asked him on where he looks for inspiration when coming up with defenses.
That's a long question that I can spend a lot of time on, you know, and I learned a lot from the defensive guy in the back of the room back there that you're always adapting. You have to adjust to them, but you have to dictate to them as well. If you sit back nowadays and let offenses dictate to you, they can do enough things to drive down the field and be explosive and make big plays and score quickly that it can become frustrating. You have to have ways to create negative plays. I think every defensive coach would say that. But I do think looking forward and back, which is really important. You know, we have a relatively young defensive coordinator in Glenn Schumann who spends more time on Zooms. He loves talking football. He spends time with NFL coaches, high school coaches. Some of the best ideas we've ever gotten defensively came from great high school minds in the state that we were coaching in, because they came up with really innovative ideas, because they defend these offenses sometimes before we do. And I've always been enamored with that in-game adjustment of what we can give a kid or give a defense to help them against something they're doing. You're always reacting, but you do want to dictate at times too by the way you pressure and the things you do.
Sounds like what Mike Krzyzewski always said about basketball defense. And he said a lot of times people tend to think of offense as a fast car and defense as a brick wall. It's also really important to think of defense as a fast car.
And that's the way he would say it.
And he would, their idea of a pressure at the time was, he sort of pioneered this man-to-man pressure defense, rather than falling back in a zone, or rather than say, how do we stop this? It's how do we create havoc?
I really enjoyed him talking about that, because one, I like when coaches can get away from it's media day. So you got like some of the built-in stuff of, how's your roster going to look this year? And is Carson Beck a Heisman candidate? Like, there's some of that where I've talked to enough coaches to know that coaches actually really love talking about coaching and talking ball. So in asking, and Saban was in the back of the room. That's who he was referring to, the guy in the back of the room, which made things very awkward when Kalen DeBoer was at the podium. Because, all right, so Dan, here's how they had it set up.
So he was
Dan, he wasn't just there. So imagine, like, you go to a wedding and there's, like, a big old ballroom. Because that's where the SEC media days were, a bunch of connected ballrooms, all right? So there's a stage, and then I would say 50 yards away in the back was where ESPN and the SEC network was set up.
Okay.
And so it wasn't just like Saban walked into the room. Saban's on a riser on a set, and they, like, kind of like Big Ten is doing right now, where they would toss to the guy having the press conference. So there they are. I think it was Dari Noka, or it may have been Jordan Rogers who was hosting that day. And then they were like, okay, let's hear from the Alabama coach, Kalen DeBoer. So Kalen comes walking out, and then Nick Saban's in his chair and turns. I'm sure Kalen.
Awkward.
It's super awkward. So I'm like looking back.
And what do you have for us, sir?
I'm looking back and forth to look at the reaction. I'm pretty sure Kalen has had quite enough of all this. Saban's got an office in Bryant-Denny Stadium. So anyway, being able to talk with Kirby Smart about, like, defense stuff was really cool. And the idea of, like, we were talking about with quarterbacks, and how these quarterbacks are now coming up as the most athletic player on the team, so they're playing quarterback. You know, like,
because in high school, that's the guy you can win a lot of games.
100%
The best athlete in your town is touching the ball every
time. Give that person, instead of making them a receiver and counting on me to get that person the ball, why not just give them the ball? So hearing him go, oh, with some of the offenses that they've seen, to go look at the high school and talk to the high school coaches and say, what do you guys do against this? Knowing that if you're Kirby Smart, you can also get the best athletes to play the defense that you want to play.
Because the lower the level, the higher the disparities, the further you get down the roster.
Right.
And
so you've got to come up with stuff.
Sometimes you don't have the, which is why, if you, as an example, the best thing the spread offense did was get the defense's worst defensive backfield out there. Because if there's all these guys, it's like, well, we have two really good corners. Our third guy's pretty good.
Right.
Our fourth guy's Now, I mean,
and now you're drafting to that.
Right.
Like, Kyler Murray is your nickel guy, and you're drafting to that. And you're looking at Tyreek Stevenson and saying, you know, he can work on the outside, but man, look at all that athleticism. If we put him on the slot guy, that he can
but
make
you've got
plays.
Your pick of it at that level. The point is that the innovation, the mother of, you know, the mother of invention is necessity. And high school coaches, they show up and they, what do I got? This is all I got?
Okay.
All right. Here we go. And
here's how we're going to attack this.
And sometimes there's a play that gets put in there, or we're, look, we got to play this defense because this guy's hurt, and we're going to just try to. And a college coach would be like, ooh, that works. And now I've got actual talent where I could use where this. But the invention came from having to cover for guys who aren't as good.
Correct. So it was just cool to be able to talk like ball. With what, the person who I think is one of the best defensive minds in our game at any level.
All right, let's talk a little bit of Bears football with Jason Leisure next on The Score.
The Bears.
Dan Bernstein, Lawrence Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
That's a pop. Make it sexy, okay? It has to be sexy, otherwise you don't eat, okay?
Yeah, make it sexy.
I'm gonna do my best. I was at SEC Media Days last week. I had a great time there. It was really wonderful to interact. I do think that we should have Clark Lee, the Vanderbilt coach, on, even though I don't think his team's going to be very good. I think he's very interesting.
Well, if he's as good as the Vanderbilt baseball coach was with this,
yeah,
he was awesome.
Yeah, but I went down there and I had like a primary objective of what I wanted to do. I wanted to talk defense with Kirby Smart.
Okay.
Because I often go down YouTube rabbit holes on Kirby Smart's defensive fronts. I'm fascinated with the Mint front, where it's a zero technique and two heavy fives that he uses. And his,
what does he call it?
The Mint front, M-I-N-T.
Mint front.
And seeing like what, how he feels about keeping people off of talented linebackers and letting them flow to the ball. And he's really good at defense. So I got my opportunity and I raised my hand. And while everyone else was asking about, you know, who's going to be good on Georgia this year, and you got this transfer who's coming in from blah, 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 I was like, hey, I want to ask you a question specifically about defense, because I think that he's so innovative.
I bet he liked it.
He did. Here was his response when I asked him on where he looks for inspiration when coming up with defenses.
That's a long question that I can spend a lot of time on, you know, and I learned a lot from the defensive guy in the back of the room back there that you're always adapting. You have to adjust to them, but you have to dictate to them as well. If you sit back nowadays and let offenses dictate to you, they can do enough things to drive down the field and be explosive and make big plays and score quickly that it can become frustrating. You have to have ways to create negative plays. I think every defensive coach would say that. But I do think looking forward and back, which is really important. You know, we have a relatively young defensive coordinator in Glenn Schumann who spends more time on Zooms. He loves talking football. He spends time with NFL coaches, high school coaches. Some of the best ideas we've ever gotten defensively came from great high school minds in the state that we were coaching in, because they came up with really innovative ideas because they defend these offenses sometimes before we do. And I've always been enamored with that in-game adjustment of what we can give a kid or give a defense to help them against something they're doing. You're always reacting, but you do want to dictate at times too by the way you pressure and the things you do.
Sounds like what Mike Krzyzewski always said about basketball defense. And he said a lot of times people tend to think of offense as a fast car and defense as a brick wall. It's also really important to think of defense as a fast car.
And that's the way he would say it.
That he would, their idea of a pressure at the time was, he sort of pioneered this man-to-man pressure defense rather than falling back in a zone, or rather than say, how do we stop this? It's how do we create havoc?
I really enjoyed him talking about that because, one, I like when coaches can get away from the, I mean, it's media day, so you got like some of the built-in stuff of, how's your roster going to look this year? And is Carson Beck a Heisman? Like, there's some of that where I've talked to enough coaches to know that coaches actually really love talking about coaching and talking ball. So in asking, and Saban was in the back of the room. That's who he was referring to, the guy in the back of the room, which made things very awkward when Kalen DeBoer was at the podium. All right, so Dan, here's how they had it set up.
So he was there. Ooh, he was sort of.
Dan, he wasn't just there. So imagine like you go to a wedding and there's like a big old ballroom, because that's where the SEC media days were, a bunch of connected ballrooms, all right? So there's a stage, and then I would say 50 yards away in the back was where ESPN and the SEC network was set up.
Okay.
And so it wasn't just like Saban walked into the room. Saban's on a riser on a set, and they like kind of like Big Ten is doing right now, where they would toss to the guy having the press conference. So there they are. I think it was Dari Noka, or it may have been Jordan Rogers who was hosting that day. And then they were like, okay, let's hear from the Alabama coach, Kalen DeBoer. So Kalen comes walking out, and then Nick Saban's in his chair. And turns. I'm
That's
sure Kalen.
Awkward.
It's super awkward. So I'm like looking back.
And what do you have for us, sir?
I'm looking back and forth to look at the reaction. And I'm pretty sure Kalen has had quite enough of all this. Saban's got an office in Bryant-Denny Stadium. So anyway, being able to talk with Kirby Smart about like defense stuff was really cool. And the idea of, like we were talking about with quarterbacks and how these quarterbacks are now coming up as the most athletic player on the team, so they're playing quarterback. You know, like,
because in high school, that's the guy you can win a lot of games.
100%.
The best athlete in your town is touching the ball every time.
Right. Give that person, instead of making them a receiver and counting on me to get that person the ball, why not just give them the ball? So hearing him go, oh, with some of the offenses that they've seen, to go look at the high school and talk to the high school coaches and say, what do you guys do against this? Knowing that if you're Kirby Smart, you can also get the best athletes to play the defense that you want to play.
Because the lower the level, the higher the disparities, the further you get down the roster.
Right. And so you've got to come up with stuff.
Sometimes you don't have, which is why, if you, as an example, the best thing the spread offense did was get the defense's worst defensive backfield out there. Because if there's all these guys, it's like, well, we have two really good corners. Our third guy's pretty good.
Right.
Our fourth guy's eh. Now
you're drafting to that.
Right.
Like Kyler Murray is your nickel guy, and you're drafting to that. And you're looking at Tyrique Stevenson and saying, you know, he can work on the outside, but man, look at all that athleticism. If we put him on the slot guy, that he can
make
plays.
But you've got your pick of it at that level. The point is that the innovation, the mother of, you know, the mother of invention is necessity. And high school coaches, they show up and they, what do I got? This is all I got?
Okay.
All right. Here we go. And
here's how we're going to attack this.
And sometimes there's a play that gets put in there, or we got to play this defense because this guy's hurt, and we're going to just try to. And a college coach would be like, ooh, that works. And now I've got actual talent where I could use where this, but the invention came from having to cover for guys who aren't as good.
Correct. So it was just cool to be able to talk like ball with what the person who I think is one of the best defensive minds in our game at any level.
All right, let's talk a little bit of Bears football with Jason Leisure next on The Score.
The Bears.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.